Hello and welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists from around the world. I'm Viv Davis from CEPR. It's the 5th of August 2010 and I'm talking to Professor Xavier Freixas from the Universitat Pompeu Fabra in Barcelona about the outcome of the recent stress tests imposed on European banks and, in particular, the impact of the tests on Spain. I began by asking Professor Freixas what he thought the main objectives of the stress tests were in the first place.
Yes. To answer that, I like to see it in a context. So on the in March, it was decided to have a stress test, European Committee of Banking Supervisors have already done before. But then, with the Greek crisis, there was a lack of information and transparency to the market that was hurting solvent, liquid, serious banking institutions. And so there was a pressure by those banking institutions to have more transparency, and so this was, I think, the main driving force that has led to have such an exercise with the results being available and then everyone being able to perform additional tests on the result, right? I think that there were basically two objectives that are different, and therefore your perspective on how good the stress test results are depend on your views. So first, there is one objective, and that is to have more transparency in order to identify what are the fragile banks, and that's one thing. So to discriminate among the top solvent sound banks and those who are in bad shape. That was clearly one objective, obviously promoted by those banks that are successful in this crisis, so let's say relatively successful. But there is a second objective that is related to the strain on budgetary resources, that's to see whether if there are systemically important financial institutions at risk, well, whether the country has sufficient available resources to support and restructure these too-big-to-fail institutions. Right? So the stress test is great regarding the discrimination part. It's clear to see that there are banks that are really in good shape and others, seven in particular, that are, you know, that need additional resources. That's one thing. Then whether there are banks that need more resources, whether the governments in those countries are able to provide these resources, then this depends on how you design the stress test and is more sensitive to whether you want to the assumptions of the stress test. If you have a catastrophic test, then no government has sufficient resources to bail out the main banks in the country, right? So this is much more sensitive. But the discriminating exercise is great because then we know relatively to each other how banks are performing.
The results of the stress tests show that only 7 out of 91 banks failed to meet their capital requirements. Were you surprised by this? Many commentators are of the opinion that the tests weren't robust enough. They suggest, for example, that the capital adequacy requirement at 6% was too generous, and that there were also significant discrepancies between the assumptions that were used in different countries. What's your opinion on the question of robustness? Did the tests ask the right questions, or do you think that consistency and credibility were perhaps sacrificed?
Well, there is one first thing. Well, this is related to the previous question. If the objective is to, if you prioritize as the objective to discriminate among banks, then this is a minor criticism. If the key issue is whether Europe has sufficient budgetary resources to bail out the banks that are in trouble, then it's critical to have the right assumptions. Right? So my view is rather that the main exercise is to provide transparency to the market so that the solvent banks are able to borrow from the market more easily in spite of being located in, you know, in such or such country, which in countries that have budgetary restraints. Now regarding the question, is it too, are the assumptions too mild? Well, I would tend to say that the starting point in the exercise is today's asset prices as they are. So we are considering additional fall in the prices, but we are taking as a starting point today's prices, so that the initial point is not taking into account the bubbles that were in asset prices, say, 3 years ago. So from that perspective, it's not having a reasonable drop is not a bad assumption. Now, the exercise considers two scenarios, the benchmark, which is quite generous, I think, and the adverse scenario, which is obviously the interesting one. And in the adverse scenario, I think that the macroeconomic assumptions are rather optimistic. But on the other side, the risk assumptions are quite rigorous. So the adverse shock means a 4.4% losses in corporate loans, a 2.1% for retail portfolio. And I think this, contrasting with the optimistic macroeconomic scenario, this is a serious drop it's a serious increase in the losses of the bank. So from that perspective, I think that the functions are quite good indeed. Now, one thing we can say is that the market reaction was positive to the stress test. So if the criticism regarding the assumptions being too generous was founded, then, of course, the market would not have reacted in this positive way, I think. So there was genuine new information that was coming from the exercise.
Five of the seven banks that failed the stress test were Spanish cajas, or savings banks. Why did they fail, and what does this now mean both for those particular banks and for the Spanish banking system?
First, why did they fail? A combination, right? What comes to mind is the sentence of Chuck Prince that when the music goes on, you get up and dance, right? And indeed, this was hurting into the same investment strategy, and this is reinforced because you see all your competitors are investing in real estate mortgages. And so the problem was losses in real estate development. So this financing real estate development has been lethal to these cajas. In addition, this comes at a point in time where cajas begin to compete more with one another and try to expand their market outside their region. Cajas are small financial institutions which are quite regional. So some of these cajas start lending in regions and therefore in markets they are not so knowledgeable about, with the so-called winner's curse risk. That is, when you enter a new market, you start basically getting the borrowers that nobody else gets, right? And that statistical evidence on this, which tells us that after 3 years you have lots of losses that are due to the fact that you are entering a new market. So this has combined with the first point, with the cajas investing in real estate development. They have combined this with excessive growth outside their own zone of competence, right? And outside their own natural market. The fourth thing, the third point is that there has been bad corporate governance, and there is a very interesting paper by Vicente Cunhat and Luis Garicano from London School of Economics, both Spanish from London School of Economics, on performance, and they show that the loan losses of the cajas depend on the board of directors. And when the managers do not have graduate studies, then you have 1% additional loan losses. They don't have any banking experience. You have to add 1% additional loan losses. And finally, if they have been elected to a political position, then you have to add 1% additional loan loss. Now, the new law for the cajas implies that in order to be a manager for the cajas, it is quite recent, you cannot have held any political position, which is great. I think that will help a lot. And finally, there is the final nail in the cajas coffin is the fact that you have a negative growth environment, you have negative growth, and this will affect all Spanish banks, of course. Those that are well diversified, like Santander, BBVA, which have a large fraction of their business in Latin America, of course, are less affected by the negative growth in Spain, of course. So that's how will this affect the Spanish system? Well, it has affected the Spanish system because the market has reacted to this by considering all Spanish banks as a uniform type of financial institution. Well, now the stress tests have been very good for Spain, and that's why the Bank of Spain has chosen very strong assumptions, very, very rigorous assumptions, 30% drop in real estate prices, for instance, so that the financial market are able to see the difference between a caja and, say, Banco Santander, which are completely different animals, if both are in the same jurisdiction.
During the last week, we've seen international investors rushing back in to fund the activities of Europe's banks, in spite of the criticism over the robustness of the tests. Some commentators have suggested that this is a result not just of the outcome of the stress tests, but also a consequence of the relaxation of the proposed Basel III bank regulations. What do you make of this renewed confidence and buoyancy? Is it justified?
Well, I think that is a very positive reaction from the market. I like to think that there is something in the etymology of the word, and the crisis is the turning point in a disease, and the original Greek is from the Greek word to separate, to decide or to judge, and the stress test has indeed discriminated among top well-capitalized efficient banks and those who are not, right? So what we expect from a crisis in general is an efficient banking system. And this we can only have if we have a wave of mergers and acquisitions, takeovers, whether hostile or not. And so what we need to is, what we want to see is definitely some activity on that front. Now, of course, if all banks are limited in their funding, if all banks are facing market liquidity, funding liquidity, then this will never develop. With the stress test, the market has more information so that it will be easier for the well-capitalized bank to access resources and then maybe to buy, say, assets from other banks or to buy other banks. The example I have in mind is on August 4th, so on August 3rd, 2 days ago, the Santander bought 318 branches to the Royal Bank of Scotland. And so that's, this means that Santander is now confident enough that it has access to liquidity, and my view is that this is directly related to the stress test.
But given the extent of bank debt in the Eurozone generally, with its high loan-to-deposit ratios, how vulnerable do you think the banking system really is in Europe? Do you think it could withstand a severe shock, such as, for example, a sovereign default by a Eurozone member?
this is an unlikely event, and this is a question which is difficult to answer. To some extent, it depends on how the default is managed. It may be the case that we are thinking of a default, like an Italian default, where you restructure and then the 3 months become a 10-year or something like that. If it is the case, then the European Central Bank can manage and could do something about it. If not, things are more complicated. But nevertheless, the stress test has shown one interesting point, that some of the banks that are more vulnerable to sovereign risk are those banks that are precisely in Germany or in France. This is good news because the public finances in those countries are much better than those the public finances in, say, Spain or Greece, of course.
Generally, do you think the whole exercise of stress testing this time in Europe has been a successful project, a successful initiative?
Definitely. And while in the U.S. it's easier to coordinate because, of course, there are several regulators, but there is a main regulator, which is the Fed. Here, it really shows how the Fed is becoming a serious European banking authority and is able to coordinate a complex exercise. Of course, it has to negotiate the assumptions, presumably with each country, regarding what is a reasonable assumption for real estate drop in Austria, which I think is an increase of 2%, which is assumed. But, you know, but still, I think it's very positive and unprecedented. I think it's quite a success in cooperation and quite a success in transparency. So overall, I'm very positive on what has on how successful the exercise has been. And of course, it could be improved, definitely. And of course, it could, you could say, well, rather than tier one, I would have preferred to have core tier one, excluding perpetual non-cumulative type of securities, right? But overall, I think this is a minor point.
Xavier, thanks very much for speaking to us today.
Thank you.